questions, and today we will conclude the public hearing and begin a work session on the budget for the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And to conclude the public hearing, John Bolio, if you could come forward. I think there are some odds and ends that are left over from yesterday.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. There were a few questions yesterday regarding earthquakes. More information was requested. What I would like to do this morning or this afternoon, if it fits your schedule, would be simply to make that statement and then turn some of those brief presentations over to Dennis Olmstead. And then at some appropriate time, I have a few minutes where I'd like to make some closing comments if I could. So with no further ado, I'll turn it over to Dennis. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dennis Olmstead, Deputy Director, Geology and Mineral Industries. And I'd just like to go through some of the visual aids that we've had sitting around the room the last couple of days and accept questions about them if there are any. And I'm not going to go through all of them. We brought quite a stack of posters. We've laminated a number of our publications onto foam board over the years. And I'm just going to go through a few of them as examples of the type of hazards work that we've done over the past several years. Again, this is part of our program one, as I mentioned the other day. And first I'm going to just hold up a few publications that we've put out, the small format type of thing. And these will illustrate different types of publications. For example, there are several types, ones that we've done as staff people, ones that we have partnered with other people or other organizations, and they've been published through our publications group. We have released publications that other people have written, but that we felt were necessary to be out on the street and available, and so we have run them through our publication group to get them out there. And then there are publications by other people that we have promoted because we think they are a good idea for people to know about. An example of the first type is Special Paper 32, which is one that John and I put together, and this is for local government to use to help them organize their thinking on hazards and decide what to do about it. And so it tells them things such as characterize the hazard so you really understand it. Strategize about how you're going to deal with it. Maybe you need a steering committee or a local technical team, some kind of a citizen committee perhaps. Look at all of your options. Figure out which option looks like it'll work. Decide how you're going to follow through on that option, things of that nature. So it's a handbook on how local government can deal with their hazards. And this came out of the Salem landslide mapping project that we briefly talked about the other day. Another publication that we put out 3 or 4 years ago was a HAZUS software, computer run. HAZUS is a program that was produced by the federal government to estimate damage and loss from earthquakes. And Oregon was the first state to successfully run this program statewide. And this was the result of that computer run. And this estimates the amount of damage, the number of buildings damaged, the dollar loss, and the number of casualties that we would expect from a particular type of earthquake. So this is another example of a publication on hazards that we as a staff put out. An example of a partnered project would be this book called the Penrose Conference 2000. Penrose is the name given to conferences that are held from time to time by the Geological Society of America. And these are very prestigious conferences. They tend to draw people in from all over the world that are interested in a particular topic. In this case, the topic was subduction zone earthquakes. And Oregon has a subduction zone hazard. So does Alaska. So do several other parts of the world. But it's only been the past 10 or 20 years that we have realized that we have a big problem because of our subduction zone earthquake hazard. And people came from all over the world to attend this meeting in Seaside, which Dogami co-convened with the Geological Society of America. And something unique about this conference, normally these are closed conferences just to invited people, but this particular one had a public session, and it was advertised in the paper. And we had about 250-person turnout for that public session where people could ask questions about this hazard. So that was really successful and quite unique for the Penrose style. An example of a product that's produced outside of Dogami, but that we published, is an open file report called Using Earthquake Hazard Maps. And this was written by a consultant called Spangle Associates down in California, and this was done for Metro, for the Portland area. It's applicable to other cities that have maps that we've produced, but this one was done for the Portland Metro area maps that we published. And this explains for local government how they can use those maps and interpret those maps for their use. So here is an example of a non-Dogami written product that we felt was necessary to be published. Another example of that type of product, this is Landslide Loss Reduction, a guide for state and local government planning. Now this one was actually published in Colorado. We had nothing to do with publishing this product, but it was so good that we thought people in Oregon should know about it. So we simply got permission from Colorado and we went ahead and published it, put a cover on it, and now it's available in Oregon. Whereas before we did this, Oregonians would never have figured out that it existed, for the most part. It would have been hard for them to locate.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What was the cost to your agency for reproducing that and putting a cover on it?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, I don't have those figures at my fingertips. I could certainly provide them for you.
It would be helpful to know what the cost difference is between the ones that you publish, the ones that you publish in partnership, and then the ones that you don't publish at all. You just put a new cover on it and make copies of it.
All right, I'll get some figures for you.
Thank you.
Finally, this publication is a FEMA publication, Federal Emergency Management Agency. This one is Guidelines for Seismic Rehab of Buildings. And we had nothing to do with publishing this, but we're a booster of this sort of publication because we advise lots of folks to use this to determine what their needs are for rehab and then how to go about it. And FEMA's been big on this type of publication. There are a number of different publications on screening buildings that may need rehabilitation for seismic hazards, and then how to actually go about doing the rehab. So this is one that we did not publish, but one that we have been promoting to local government, primarily in emergency managers.
May I follow up, Madam Chair, please?
In a situation like that, is there a cost to your agency associated with promoting that particular publication?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, there's actually not a cost, but there's a potential benefit. I wouldn't say there's any cost because we don't go to any extra effort to promote a book such as this. We partner with planners and emergency managers to promote our own products,
right.
And in the course of doing so, we would tell them, well, now don't forget about FEMA 273 or whatever the publication might be. So there's really no additional cost for us to do that.
Thank you.
I'd like to move to the large format products. And what I thought I would do is simply hold them up here so you can see them one at a time. Now these are examples, by no means a complete set of what we've produced over the last few years. Can you see that over there? Let me back it up a bit. This is West Salem. This is one of the landslide projects I mentioned the other day, where we partnered with the City of Salem and with Marion County. In this case, it's Polk County. We also did a project for Marion County down here. And so this was a landslide project, follow-up to a number of lawsuits that they had and a need on their part to produce a solution to this without just working from lawsuit to lawsuit. And our part of this was to produce the landslide maps and recommendations on how to deal with different parts of the area. Now, for West Salem, you'll notice that we have 6 different hazard areas. We've outlined what they are. We have a table that tells what recommended strategies would be to deal with the different areas. And a key point here for the city would be that a number of these areas, the yellow color, for example, is a low hazard area. So in those yellow areas, which is the bulk of the area in West Salem, we do not need a rigorous geotechnical report to deal with landslides because we already know the hazard is low. So it tells the city and it tells developers that they're not going to have an onerous reporting responsibility if they're in those areas. And so that makes it more cost-effective for them and more cost-effective for the city. And the city then will focus on areas that actually have a higher hazard, where they will require more rigorous reporting. That's an example of landslide publication. This is an example of an earthquake publication. This is what we call a scenario earthquake on the Portland Hills Fault. And to produce a map like this, what we do is we locate the fault and we say, what if there were a particular size earthquake at a particular place on the fault? And so we chose the downtown Portland area and we chose a 6.8 magnitude earthquake in this instance. And we ran a computer model to develop relative hazards. And this is the map that came out of it. So this is a what's called a scenario earthquake. It's for a particular earthquake. Other maps you may have seen, and I'll touch on them in a minute, are called relative earthquake hazard maps, where instead of having a particular earthquake, we just say, if there were an earthquake anywhere nearby, here's the relative hazard in the city. So that's a scenario earthquake. This is the relative earthquake hazard map for Eugene Springfield. And this also has a amplification map, meaning how much do the soils amplify the shaking in a case of an earthquake, and also a landslide map down here in the corner. How much landslide hazard would you expect? And then the big map is the combined amplification and landslide map into one large map, which is the overall earthquake hazard. And here again, this is relative hazard. So a dark area down here would be a higher hazard than a light area. But it doesn't tell us exactly what type of damage or how much damage. That will be dependent on the type of structure, and it'll be dependent on where the earthquake is and how big the earthquake is. There's a lot of factors involved. This is simply a picture of relative, one area relative to another, how bad is the damage expected to be. So this, again, is a different type of earthquake map, and we've done these for several cities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dennis, a couple of questions for you, and you can answer them both at the same time. Is how long have you been doing this kind of thing? And based on that, we've had a couple of minor earthquakes. How accurate are you in terms of being able to predict things like landslides based on practical experience?
Madam Chair, our mandate to do this type of thing goes back to 1989. So that's when we first started. We started with the metro area because it has the most population,
sure.
It has the most people at risk, it has the most buildings, it has the most old buildings that are structurally weak. So we started there, and we've also now since done Springfield, we've done Salem, we've done about 60 small rural communities in Western Oregon. I'll show one of those maps in a second. So we've done much of Western Oregon, most of Western Oregon. Populated areas. How well we can predict, that's hard to say. We have not had enough history. We've only had one recent earthquake in the valley that caused any damage in 1993, and the same for Klamath Falls, same year. That's a very small sample. Able to tell us how well of a predictor we are.
Okay.
Also, one other thing, as I mentioned, the type of building construction is a big factor. So we could say, well, this orange area is a really high hazard area. If we had an earthquake, it's conceivable that there were all the buildings in this area are one-story stick residences, which tend to do very well in an earthquake. So we could have an earthquake and have no damage in this area, no significant damage. If that happened, we wouldn't expect any damage in the lower areas either.
I see.
Representative Krieger.
When Sean and I were on the landslide task force, we were talking about huge amounts of water, short period of time, 5-6 inches in 24 hours. Is there any way you could overlay something like that that would increase the hazard, like in Portland? I was over in the West Portland, took us on a tour through there. I can see if you'd had landslides almost occurring from saturation, then you put an earthquake on top of it, it's going to be a completely different scenario, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, that's right. If we had an earthquake during the winter when soils were saturated, we would expect more of the high relative hazard areas to show damage. We have done both types of mapping in Salem. That's one area where we've done water-induced landslide mapping and earthquake-induced landslide mapping. There are differences. Earthquake-induced landslides tend to be bigger but more sporadic because we don't have a lot of earthquakes continuously. They tend to be in the same areas, generally speaking. Geology influences both of them. If you have saturated soils and an earthquake at the same time, then you would expect larger landslide.
Chair,
that goes to like forest lands, and we've got a slope of 60%, and under normal conditions we may not have a problem there, but you put that water there and you put the earthquake, then you've got a completely different scenario, and you can never get to the point of no risk.
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, the concept of no risk is a real important concept, and that's something that we have been talking with emergency managers about. It's something we've been talking with planners about. You really can't get to no risk.
Yeah.
And that's a real important point that people need to understand.
Some people think we can get there, right?
No, and that's important for people to understand. Glad you're risking. All right. This is the Ashland, Cottage Grove, Grants Pass, Roseburg, and Sutherland. These are some of the smaller communities I mentioned that we have mapped. We've mapped these on a reconnaissance basis, which means we have fewer data points than we did for some of the metro areas. We have used slope angles, we have used geology, and we've used any subsurface data from things like water wells that we could scrounge from water resources records and so forth. And so we've gone through Western Oregon, we've done about 50 of these smaller communities around Western Oregon. And these have all been released in published form. Here again, there are a lot of users for these products. There are planners, there are emergency managers, insurance industry, building owners, fire districts. All of these users have a slightly different need for them. A planner might look at a map like this and say, well, in certain high hazard areas, I'm going to try to put either open space, maybe, or single-family homes. I'm not going to have skyscrapers, let's say, tall buildings in those areas. An emergency manager might look at a map like this and say, well, when we have an earthquake, I'm going to know where to expect damage. And so I'm going to allocate my resources to respond to that area that I can expect damage in. So different users are going to have different needs. We think this type of map will serve all of those people. And this map's been out for a year or two, and we provide these maps to those planners and emergency managers in these communities. And of course, we also publicize it for anyone who wants to come and buy it over the counter. So this is another example of an earthquake hazard map. And finally, tsunami mapping. We've talked about landslide mapping, and we've talked about earthquake mapping. Tsunami mapping is the other major type of hazard mapping that we do. This is Gold Beach. We have done the entire coast at a reconnaissance level, And we have done several communities on a detailed level, like Gold Beach. We've done Astoria, Warrenton, we've done Seaside, we've done Newport and Siletz Bay, and we've done Gold Beach. Now we're working on Coos Bay. These maps are useful for communities for planning. They're useful for evacuation. A number of communities are doing their own evacuation planning. We don't get deeply involved with that. Oregon Emergency Management does, and the local community emergency managers do. And they put up evacuation signs, and this type of map helps them decide where to evacuate and where safe ground will be when the citizens evacuate. This is done by computer modeling. A lot of data goes into it. A lot of expertise goes into it. This is really state-of-the-art computer modeling. We make use of people and computers over at Oregon Graduate Institute to help us do this modeling. Gold Beach, one of our most recent tsunami hazard maps. So I've talked about some publications about earthquakes. I've talked about some publications about tsunamis and landslides. And in some cases, like earthquakes and landslides, they go hand in hand. You'll have both of those hazards simultaneously. And our maps depict those hazards together. I'd be happy to answer any questions about this piece of our program one, if you have any.
No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are honored to have Mr. Don Christensen, who's the chair of the board that oversees Dogami. Did you want to say a few words to us today?
May I?
Yes, we'd be very pleased to hear from you.
Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Don Christensen, chair of Dogami, and I'm here to tell you what a great organization I'm associated with, what a great department this is. I've served on several boards and commissions. This is the star of them all, and it's because of the people, the 35, 36 people in this agency. You've seen examples with the pamphlets, the paperwork. You've seen examples of the charts, the maps, and the top people we have working with us. Charles, our fiscal officer, keeps us on track. Gary, our MLR guy, keeps the operators doing what they're expected to do out in the quarries and the mines. Dennis, as you just had a good demonstration, knows about the work that the scientists do in our department, makes the information available to the public, and John, of course, rides herd over all of them. And we, the three citizen members, over him. There are just three of us, Vera Simonton from Pendleton, Barbara Seymour, who is in the audience today, from Salem. And I've represented the coast for several years. I live in Salem now also. So I'm appealing to you folks to do what you can to support our budget request. To help these scientists continue to do the excellent work they've done for 64 years, I think it is now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments from the committee?
Just maybe a quick comment. I worked with John on the Landslide Task Force, and he was instrumental in getting science into a form that a retired cop could understand. And I really appreciate what you brought forward, John. He was able to do things I don't think other people could have gotten done in a way that people really accepted it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
Madam Chair, if I could, I just I want to know what drove you off the coast. He's been doing a great job of representing the coast for a long time, but I just wanted to echo his comments. I mean, I shouldn't support the agency. This is an agency that has dragged me through mud and muck and wind and rain, but they do an excellent job.
Well, Senator Dukes, we invited you to the dedication of that tsunami warning sign we put up and so on that day, and it was an inclement day to be sure, but we were happy to have you there and be a part of that.
That was one of the better things that the agency's taken me to.
Remind me to never take a tour with those folks then.
Yeah. Oh, but you'll learn a lot.
Oh, I bet.
Mr. Bullio, would you like to recap?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Dukes. I believe that in our last trip to the swamps, looking at subduction zone, we've recovered one of your boots.
Oh. I don't want to
really
know the details.
It's really bad as they go out on those things and they bring a camera.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think for the whole staff and my board, and certainly for me, I would like to express extreme appreciation for the attention you've given us, for the quality of the questions, and for your patience when perhaps we've been exuberant. I, of course, didn't have my mother here to control my behavior. So it's been a very rewarding experience for me, and I felt that more so than ever in the past, we've been able to get a few key ideas out on the table or in front of it, and I would like to just recap some of those and then make a few closing comments. I feel that the core values of the department are, it's not just the balancing of the revenues against the expenditures, which is the, mathematically that's easy at least. In the real world sometimes it's very difficult, as I'm sure you're all aware. In our case, when we try to stretch the equation to also include maintaining quality of staff, maintaining an actual field presence as seen in our organization chart, and pursuing a mission that I've defined in the last 2 days as public service for the state of Oregon, not being a store and it's not being a consulting firm. Those are, we happen to have a store, but we aren't one. We happen to know a lot of things, but it doesn't make us a consulting firm for specific clients. We are a geologic survey designed, put into place, and managed for the public service of the people of Oregon. And I feel like we've been able to say that with more clarity than ever before, and I appreciate that. I'm given to a thought that we didn't get to, and that is, and we might, maybe we can pursue that more next time, but in my way of thinking, there's a place where Oregon fits in a larger cog of natural resource governance, I guess I'd call it. And that is, if we are to have as a foundation of good natural resource management, voluntary action by informed citizens in their day-to-day lives, and whatnot, these people have to know what they're dealing with. And that's why we view our public education function and our information as important. And that's why we're asking for our board to be expanded from 3 members to 5 so that they can drag us in that direction. The second thing I would say that is if and when regulation is required, which obviously it is in many places, then that regulation works best if it's founded on a citizenry that understands what it's doing and why it's doing it. Again, we get back to public education about natural resources. In some states, that's not particularly as important as it is in Oregon, but in Oregon, where we have the diversity of geology and conditions and hazards, groundwater conditions and whatever, this is a state where if you need to know something, this is it. And finally, I would say when and if we have regulation, as Dennis has pointed out, and if we want that regulation to be cost-effective and to work, it has to be focused in the right areas and it has to be guided with sound scientific principles. And I think the Salem Project is a perfect example of using our information to focus regulation where it's needed most, to direct it out of those areas where it isn't needed, provide the insights needed to guide the exact requirements that are going to be expected of the people that have to follow those regulations. So those are the thoughts that I'm left with. I think we're a geologic survey. I would like to run us as one. I think we have a place to play in a larger sphere of natural resource government. It's incumbent upon the department to be able to communicate well what it does to a variety of parties and to develop partnerships in all directions. And we're certainly trying to do that. And in a sense, I feel in a way we're partnering with the legislature, because in the next 5 months we will be trying to help you craft better legislation, not by lobbying any particular bill, but simply by serving as expert witnesses where geology and those kinds of issues are embedded in the broader language of the bill. I'd like to thank you again on behalf of all the staff, all of my staff, even those in the field offices, for taking 3 afternoons of your time to listen to a very small agency that is happy with the work it does, but knows you have bigger problems to deal with elsewhere as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rolio. Questions or comments, Representative Bowman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple of questions. One, because your budget relies so heavily on federal funds, have you made any contacts with the new administration? Do you have a sense for whether or not the things that the federal government is funding now that support your agency operations, they will be funding in the future? Any crystal ball predictions of what will be taking place?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, part of our funding is federal funds. Some of it dries up, some of it grows. I think there are several pieces to the answer. On some of our programs, such as those that support some of our geologic mapping, we have cemented into law programs that at least allow us to compete for money. Mm-hmm. As long as we can maintain and retain good, qualified, competitive staff, we can probably continue to get that kind of money. For other programs, such as the National Earthquake Hazard Reduction Program, upon which we've relied for money for many years, we also have helped cement that into law. Unfortunately, the decisions are made by a group of people that don't understand public service, and some of our proposals this year were turned down for spurious reasons, so we have a hole in our budget there. For other things, such as the Federal Emergency Management Agency, I have not met, obviously, the new potential appointee. We're hoping that our partnerships with the emergency managers, for example, help us. I'm also working with earthquake-related counterparts such as my own in 11 Western states and 5 protectorates around the Pacific Ocean, on the board of directors of the Western Seismic Safety Policy Commission. We are going to work as a group to try to communicate with the new director the need to continue those programs. When you add all of these success stories up, quite frankly, for next biennium, I don't see all the money that we need. We try to keep that problem out and as far in front of us as we can. Juggling act, more later on that, I guess.
May I follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My next question has to do with your glowing affirmative action report that you put in the document that you gave us when you first started speaking to us. So I want specifics now. How many women do you have working in your department? How many people of color are there?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Bowman. I was told by our public information officer I couldn't use those terms and be legal, but I'll be happy to do so since I've been asked. We have one male Asian, one female Asian American who manages the earthquake program. We have one female who manages the public education program. We have 2 Native Americans. We have 2 people with disabilities. And we probably have a few others that I'm not aware of. We have several administrative assistant types. Most of them, I think all of them are female. I think on the female-male split, we're probably 50-50 in terms of all of the people in the department. In terms of Asians and Asian Americans, we're above whatever criteria would, whatever the ratio would or should be. We have not had any permanent African Americans, although over the years we've hired many on a temporary basis when we've had temporary positions.
If I may follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes.
And how many people of color or women are in your leadership positions within your organization?
If, Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, if leadership can include team leader, because I don't have a lot of management positions, team leader would be a person who coordinates activities, in this case of 5 people. I have one, if I have 6 teams, say, about 6, then I have 2 females in charge of 2 of those teams.
If I may make a comment, I appreciate the answers to your question. I obviously you have a small staff, so obviously the number of people of color and women would be proportionate to the number of staff that you have. But I would like to suggest that I wouldn't write such a glowing affirmative action report if, in fact, you can't back it up with actual live bodies that are throughout your organization. So you've got women, you've got a couple of Asian Americans, but you have no Latinos, you have no African Americans, and until you have a workforce that's reflective of the community, I would suggest that you're not where you need to be yet.
I don't think we're where we need to be either. I would like to put on the table two additional facts. One is that we've had very, very little turnover for the last 10 years. Just within the last year we've had it. I think our ratio is, if one took the actual turnover and then applied the numbers to that, one would find the numbers were quite good. And then secondly, we have done a lot of research, we've done research nationwide and have learned, for example, in the entire United States, the last time we looked, there were only 4 African-American PhDs in geology in the whole United States. And we cannot afford to buy those people because they have a lot of job offers somewhere else. And I don't believe we've ever even, well, I think I'll leave it at that. It's a competitive business. And I hear your comments, and we will continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further comments or questions? Seeing none, Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I really appreciate the fine work this small but dedicated organization does. I just don't think Oregonians understand, in large part, how critical the information flow is from this department. For environmental reasons and for the health, peace, and safety of citizens living in geologically active areas. I happen to live in one of those areas myself at John Day. So I really appreciate the work of the department. I know as a member of the Emergency Board and a member of the Full Ways and Means Committee, this agency has credibility when it comes and says it has a problem. And it's one of those things that we can, I think, invest in with a fairly high degree of trust. The other thing I particularly like is the idea that any organization that shows up with one of the manager's mothers, I think all of our state agencies ought to make their presentations in
with front
of their moms. We know we'd be getting accurate information in that case. And then in the last instance, I really appreciate Mr. Bolio's leadership, because he is the only person that I know in state government whose name is more difficult to pronounce than my own. So I'm going to vote for this guy's budget.
Representative Hayden.
Well, I'm going to vote for their budget also, and I too want to commend you and your staff and your organization. I've followed your small agency for probably 15 years now, and I too have trekked through the mud and the snow and the volcanic craters. And I suppose I took an interest in it because of I had a legislative aide, had a friend that named Walt Youngquist, I don't know, but he's a published author. And they said, this is the group to watch, and so I have, and I commend you for what you're doing, and I'll be happy to vote for their budget.
Representative Hansen.
Well, we're joining in the admiration parade. First, I'd like to apologize for missing the presentation yesterday. There was an illness. It wasn't because of lack of interest. The other brief comment is possibly we would do better if our mothers were in the in the audience more often. But the work you do is just of vital importance to the state. When the big earthquake hits, the amount of lives that your work will be able to save will be incredible. I just hope it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen for a long time, and certainly I hope it doesn't happen under our watch. We've got a great deal of catching up to do in the state. Just looking through this building, those consoles in our offices will crush us all. That in terms of the timing of the quake, I hope we're in session when it happens so that we're down on the floor rather than in our offices where everything will tip over on us. There's still a lot of work that's left to be done in terms of making people aware of the hazards that we're dealing with, and then the political will to make the types of investments that are necessary to safeguard the public. And it's going to be a long involved process. But certainly, you've laid the course for us. Whether that political will to make the dollar investments to safeguard us as much as reasonably possible may not occur for a while. but we're certainly so much more aware now than even 10 years ago. But so it's a pleasure to see you come before us, and hopefully we can craft a budget that meets most of your needs.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. This agency is the, so I guess we could call it the maiden voyage of this committee into the budget waters here. And it has been gratifying to work with you. I think that we had some good conversations, and we were able to be very honest and forthright with each other, and I do very much appreciate that. So if there are no more comments on the part of the committee members, what I'll do is close the public hearing portion and open a work session, and turn this over to Mr. Rocco from the Legislative Fiscal Office to present the Legislative Fiscal Office's recommended budget changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a pack of material here I'll hand out. There's a memo and a spreadsheet, and we will go through that with you, and then you'll have an opportunity to ask the agency questions about these recommended changes and how it would affect the agency. And we can spend the rest of the afternoon doing that. So I'll pass these out to you now. And then
really not the rest of the afternoon, Ken.
That's my thought, too.
I'm sorry, until 3 o'clock.
Thank you.
Scheduled adjournment time.
The 2:30 is good. I'm not cold.
Who would say that?
Ask the guy lurking in the back there.
As Mr. Rocco proceeds through this presentation, please feel free to ask questions.
Yeah, that's a good question. Why don't you ask that one?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, first item I've given you is a memo. This memo is associated with the spreadsheet that's behind it. So all of the details that we're going to be talking about would be in that spreadsheet. And I'll try to keep you in the same places. I know it's difficult to be looking at two items at the same time, but we've tried to put most of the information that you need in the memo, but if you want to see how it all rolls out, then the spreadsheet is there for support. Just to summarize again, the governor's recommended budget for the agency was a 3.7% increase from the 1999-01 estimated expenditures, and it was funded at the current service level. The budget represents a combination of general fund, other funds, and federal funds, with the general fund making up about 43%. And again, the governor's budget had no enhancements beyond the current service level. So there were increases in the budget due to inflationary cost escalations and other technical items like that, but there were no enhancement packages included. The recommended budget from the fiscal office is a total of a 1.3% reduction from the current service level. And approximately 1.4% from the governor's recommended budget. And these changes represent a little over $74,000 in general fund, approximately $36,000 in other funds, and a small amount in federal funds. There are a couple of reasons for these changes. There's a technical reason due to a PERS rate adjustment that has been made, and you'll see this in all budgets, and it affects the employer contribution rate. There was a 1.53% reduction, so in some cases it translates into very small reductions in personal service costs, and in this case the 956
$1 million of federal funds. It's purely a mechanical reduction due to that Curtis rate change. The other changes are primarily related to the committee's discussion over the past few days of publication costs. When legislative fiscal looked at the agency's budget, we noticed a reduction option package that was included in the budget as required by the governor that was not taken by the governor, and this reduction option affected a position in the publications team that you've seen on the organizational chart. In looking at trying to provide efficiency in government and to try to cover some of the holes that are appearing in the governor's recommended budget statewide, the co-chairs of Ways and Means have instructed staff to look for reduction options that would not affect delivery of services. When we presented this idea to the agency, they responded that circumstances had changed and that reduction of that position from a full-time to a half-time was no longer basically affect their delivery of services. So we discussed other ways of getting at a reduction to the agency's budget. And the results of that are in this memo that we have discussed with the agency to find reductions totaling approximately $70,000 in general fund. So based on that, we have recommended no changes in staffing levels to the agency. So the staff would remain at 37 positions, which is what the governor recommended, and 35.38 FTE. If you want to turn to page 2 of the memo, the first reduction in the Geologic Investigations Program Unit under number 1A is a reduction in the base budget due to the PERS employer rate contribution change. And the numbers you see there are the effect of that computation on that program unit. $2,417 general fund, $628 other funds, and $723 federal funds.
Questions?
And if you would like to see where that shows up in the spreadsheet that's attached, it would be on page 5 of the spreadsheet. And the spreadsheets are numbered in the middle of the bottom. It'll say page 5 of 10. And if you look in the right under the shaded box, you'll see a base budget adjustment, and those items are listed there under PERS rate change. The second reduction for the program one of the agency is a recommended reduction of $60,000 in general fund, and this would be taken out of professional services, publicity and publications, and a small amount out of the in-state travel budget. These reductions are related to the idea of having the agency try to recoup more money from publication sales through their new website that they've developed and through some of the discussion that the committee has had over the past couple days about raising publication prices and trying to sell more products. So what we would recommend is adding budget report direction to the agency to investigate these kinds of activities and then report to the emergency board at some point during the interim on the results of those of that investigation. And if at that time they were able to demonstrate increased revenues from these activities, the emergency board would be able to provide them with additional limitation to spend those revenues.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bowman.
I don't know if this is the appropriate time to ask this question, but In this particular section, as we heard testimony over the last 3 days, what we heard is that we provide a lot of information to local counties and local cities, and we do a lot of work with them without expecting them to actually pay for that service. And so is this the section that would be appropriate to talk about maybe budget notes or something to ask the agency to actually look at what services they're providing that they should be charging local counties and local cities for? I mean, I use the example of Marion County. I mean, it's wonderful that we had this great, wonderful working relationship with Marion County, and we developed all this wonderful material for them. But there should be a cost to that. If they went to anybody else for that information, they would not have been able to get the expertise that they got for free. So we should not have an expectation that we would not have a clear-cut agreement about how we work with other government entities to provide that service.
And I think the intent of the note that we want to make is to do that very thing, to explore those possibilities to increase the revenue, and then as that success, as that becomes successful, mm-hmm. to be able to roll that money back into the budget.
I appreciate that. I guess my question has more to do with the writing says about the publications and the maps, and that's just one piece of the overall service that they're providing. So the note that as we currently have it just addresses those two issues. Will it be broadened, or can it be broadened, or what?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowman, the language in the budget report can be as broad as the committee wants it to be. We aren't, basically, LFO is not proposing a budget note per se, but just direction to the agency. The committee also has the opportunity to provide a statement of expectation of what they expect the agency to do with the funding that they're provided. And I think that would be an appropriate place to make a statement like that. And this could very easily be broadened, the direction to the agency could be broadened to cover precisely what you're saying, which is, as Chair Morgan has indicated, is within the intent of what we were trying to address. So that would be perfectly easily able to be completed if we wanted.
Thank you.
Please proceed. So,
Madam Chair, those are the two recommended changes for the Geologic Investigations Program Unit. Under number two, Mineland Reclamation Program, again, 2A shows a base budget reduction due to the PERS contribution rate change, and that totals $1,928 other funds and $120 in federal funds. In 2B, we're recommending a technical adjustment. In reviewing the budget document, we noticed a revenue transfer in from the Water Resources Department that was placed in the Mineland Reclamation Program, and it should be placed in Program 1, Geologic Investigations. So we're recommending putting that revenue transfer in, moving it from Program 2 into Program 1. By doing that, however, you reduce the revenue available to Program 2 at this time. So we're recommending a reduction in miscellaneous services and supplies that should be taken out of any non-fixed S&S account, and in order to keep the agency's program within balance. And that total is $32,500. By transferring the revenue to the Program 1, it will just increase the Program 1's ending balance by approximately that same amount of resource. In Program 3, Technical Support Administration.
Madam Chair. Representative Nolan.
Before we get off Program 2, I would just like to introduce an issue that I'd like to pursue, either here or through the appropriate venue, relating to, we talked a fair amount during the presentation about the fees that Dogami charges for its mined land reclamation services. I separately am still getting myself educated about how those fees are structured and how much of the costs of providing those services are recovered through that fee structure. It appears to me that there is actually a pretty good effort that the department has made in recovering the direct field costs of providing those services. But because those services benefit also from the technical support and administration services that the department offers, the whole department in the separate program three, I'd like to encourage the department to look at how much of those, that portion of its budget, could appropriately also be recovered from fees charged to direct beneficiaries, such as through the mined land reclamation services. And I understand that there's a process for doing that, and I'd like to instigate whatever that process is to encourage them to examine that in the next time it reviews its fees, and furthermore to encourage the department to institute an investigation of its fees or a reassessment of its fees expeditiously.
I'll note that in the proceedings of the meeting and have that accessible for the next time we go into this process. And thank you for bringing that up.
Okay, Madam Chair, in Program 3, Technical Support Administration, again, 3A shows a reduction in the base budget due to the PERS contribution rate change, which is $2,002 general fund, $570 other funds, and $113 federal funds. In 3B, again, this is the remaining part of that adjustment recommended to come up to that $70,000 total. It would reduce $10,000 from publicity and publications within the technical support administration program area, with the same direction as we discussed under geologic investigations of having the agency attempt to recover those monies through additional publication sales and through contracts with local government entities. We also have some other recommendations not directly related to, well, related to the budget, but not directly related to any numbers involved. As you heard Mr. Bolio discuss how his Program 1 and Program 3 are sort of intermingled, and it's hard to, and it's sort of a budgetary artifact kind of a thing, we would like you to consider directing the agency to work with Budget and Management Division of Department of Administrative Services and Legislative Fiscal to restructure that. And we've provided you with a chart, an org chart, that shows one possibility, which would looks like this, which would split, make Program 3 instead of would take the internal support team plus the director's office, basically, and make that Program 3 and combine the public education team, which is the rest of Program 3 at this point, and move that into Program 1. The agency has offered another alternative, which would be just to have two programs, have mine land reclamation and everything else, which is another an opportunity that we could go with. And the other reason we're bringing this up is in transitioning into the new Orbitz system, that's the new automated budget system that is being developed now, we will be looking at agency budget structures and organizational structures to try to get a cleaner connection between those two things. So this would be a timely thing for us to do, and we're just asking to give the agency some direction to do that with us. And in item 4B, we're also looking at having some direction for the Department of Environmental Quality and Doug Gammy to to provide additional details in the budget on the stormwater permit revenues that are currently not identified in the budget as revenue transfers. And again, according to what we've been able to ascertain, some of the this has occurred late in the budgeting process, and the agencies didn't have time to set these transfers up. We expect to have that resolved by the next time you see this budget in 2003.
Mr. Rocco, what's functionally going on here that is causing this?
Madam Chair, right now, under the memorandum of agreement between Geology and Mineral Industries and the Department of Environmental Quality, for stormwater permits that are conducted at that are required at mining sites, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries collects three of the types of permit fees that are required, and DEQ collects another permit fee, an annual permit fee, and they under the agreement, Geology and Mineral Industries keeps 75% of the fee amount and sends 25% to DEQ, and DEQ of the one they collect, they keep 25% and send 75% to Geology and Mineral Industries. In the budget, however, in the budget document that you have in front of you, it doesn't identify that money as a revenue transfer, and it's just lumped in with other revenues. And we would like to see it separately identified in the budget document so it's easier to track.
I understand. Thank you.
I'm sorry to burden you with all these technical kinds of things. Technical budget ease, I guess. Finally, Madam Chair, we would recommend changes to the appropriation bill as indicated in item 5 of the memo. We would recommend changing the general fund amount in section 1, line 7 to $3,233,364. In section 1, we would recommend deleting lines 8 through 13 of the bill as it currently exists. These under the current accounting system, this language has been determined to no longer be necessary, and it does not appear in any other agency's appropriation bill. So we're recommending elimination of that language. In section 2, which is the other funds expenditure limitation section, we're recommending deleting the $2,642,200 and inserting $2,606,573. In section 3 of the appropriation bill, we're recommending the deletion this is section 3, beginning on line 21, after the deleting the comma and everything that follows into line 23. This is language that is unnecessary for the bill and really should not be included in that section. It talks about non-limited status for deposits authorized under section 1, and under this current appropriation bill, the only deposit in section 1 is the general fund, and we don't limit general fund, we just appropriate it. So this is inappropriate language for the bill. And finally, in section 4, which is the federal funds limitation section, we're recommending deletion of the $1,657,569 and inserting instead $1,656,613. And these amounts that we're recommending for inclusion are the results of the LFO recommended changes to the budget that we've already discussed. And then finally, if the committee would like to craft some sort of statement of expectation, that is an opportunity that subcommittees have this session to do, to provide direction to the agency on how they expect the agency to use the money that they're provided. And we've already discussed the one direction that we would like to include, But if there are any others that you want, then the committee can decide to do that. Madam Chair, that's my summary of the presentation. The other material I handed out was from the agency regarding website activity, and if you'd like the agency to discuss that, I'm sure they're willing to talk to you about that.
Going back to the budget statement part of the section number 6 on the bottom of page 3, Representative Bowman, in order to address the point that you brought forward, would it be, would it cover your point if we revise the statement to say, recommended direction to report to emergency board on investigation of publication and service prices and potential for sales increase?
Excellent. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Sorry,
are you,
Senator Fairman.
Are we in work session on this bill?
We are in work session.
And are you prepared to accept a motion?
The chair would accept a motion.
I would move that we accept the budget as presented by our legislative fiscal officer and subject to the expressions of expectation that we've heard discussed here today at the recommended level.
And that we move this to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
My words exactly.
We have a motion before the committee. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Hansen.
On the recommendations for expectations, did you want to include language on fees?
That was going to be my question, too. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Was that your intent to have them...
That was Representative.
Well, we were, and I think that
How would we do that?
I'm sorry.
How would we do that, Madam Chair?
I'm not sure that putting in having them discuss their fees at this point is appropriate, and that perhaps we should be moving in that direction within a larger time frame than we have right now.
Madam Chair, I'd welcome your advice on how to raise that point in a timely fashion. If this is not the right time, I'd welcome your advice on what is the right time.
And I'm not adverse to putting it in. I would question the wisdom at this point of asking the agency to reevaluate its fees in... Well, I guess it wouldn't be a bad thing. Reevaluate the fees in the interim, and it would be something that could be brought up during the next budget discussion.
Actually, Madam Chairman, I was going to ask if you'd entertain a suggestion. We are in the process of trying to narrow in, and we're at the top end of the funnel for our budget discussions. And it's possible that fee revenue could play into a balancing of the budget. And I realize this is a very small line item detail in a very large budget, but it may be that we simply suggest that when we transmit this to the co-chairs for their consideration in the overall budget, that we mention that we are interested in seeing a realignment of fees, and that if they feel that it's necessary for that to happen, that be taken into consideration before final action is taken on this budget in the other chamber. And that also alerts the agency that if they need to take a look at making recommendations, they can be ready to do that. In terms of the larger context of fees, I think just putting the agency on alert that possibly the information that they're providing to people has a greater market value than they're capturing would be a real pointed reminder, or at least an indicator for management improvement, that maybe they ought to look to some of the private entities that are selling this information, or asking how it's being used and trying to get a market value placed on these, on this stuff. Because let's say we went to a percentage increase in fees, but find out later that this information is available from the state of Oregon and is being remarketed by somebody else at, you know, an incredible amount of money. We've seen that happen with maps. Mm-hmm. We've seen it happen with data on recreational opportunities. There's even a company that purchases the plates from the government printing office on how to do your income tax filing every year, repackages it with a new cover, and sells it for $29.95 at the newsstand. You can get the same publication free by calling the government printing office. So, you know, I would suggest that the fee revenue may play into the budget balancing. We simply note that for the co-chairs and just tell the agency to take a look at getting some information that's more market-driven on what it is that they're now selling at cost or even giving away for suggestions for a future
date. Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm prepared to vote yes on this budget. I do note with some concern that the general fund portion of this budget is $15,612 less than the legislatively approved 1999-01. And I'm wondering if there's any way for them to recapture that $15,000 or to go back to the emergency board. I believe in flat budgets. I think these are good. Zero-based budgeting is very good, but this is less than zero-based budgeting. This is less money from the general fund than this agency got in the last session. And I have a little bit of concern about that. So if you could guide me as to where we might be going with that. Is there a possibility of them going back to the emergency board if they need a small amount of money?
The intent is for them to examine the prices that they ask for the services that they give, being the publications and the maps and different things, and increase the prices, and then with the increased revenue, go back to the emergency board to get permission to roll that back into their budget.
Then do we need a budget note that this was the understanding of the committee that they would be doing this so that they can appear before the emergency board with our blessing?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I think that's what we were driving at in under Section 1B, where we're of the memo, where we're discussing directing them to report to the emergency board on the results of that investigation. And at that time, if they haven't been able to generate any additional revenue and they need supplemental money from the emergency fund, they could request that at that time, and of course.
So let it be written so that it be done. And Madam Chair, one more question.
Yes.
Will we be following our recommendations of a 2.1 decline from current service level for other budgets, do you suppose?
Yes, we will.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, one very tiny point, and then I'd like to follow up on Senator Ferrioli's comment. Given that we've stricken lines 8 through 13 in Section 1, I believe we probably also, just for housekeeping, need to strike the sub-paragraph 1 in line 5, just because there's no 2. And Madam Chair, if I may, I am appreciative of the lesson in how to make these things happen, Senator Ferrioli, and your eloquence is something I am hoping to learn from.
Oh, God, please, no!
Oh, this is going to be fun.
Man, I can see that one coming a long way. That was long distance.
You are much too gracious.
I'm trying to learn.
You're doing marvelously well.
I want, though, to... I personally want to include not only an encouragement or direction to the agency to look at their publication charges and consulting or mapping charges, possibility of fees, but also the fees collected in the mined land reclamation section. And I didn't hear that part of it included in your summary.
What I was going to ask Senator Ferrioli to do was to draft an addition onto the recommendation here that would cover that. And I'm hoping that what he's scribbling on is going to accomplish that.
Oh, of course.
This is a letter to my mom. I was inspired. I would be happy to write a letter in draft for the chair's signature, simply from the committee chair to the agency. The details, increased potential revenue for mining reclamation, publications, and mapping. And just ask the agency to be thinking about those things. It's simply an admonition. It has no effect on the budget. It's not a budget note. But I think if we've heard anything from Mr. Bolio, it's that he is a prudent manager, and a prudent manager always listens to the
to the chair of the sub for Ways and Means that has his budget under her gavel.
As a rule.
As a rule.
Smart man.
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
In following with that thought, if they do increase their fees for all of these services, do they need to come back to us for authority for an expanded or increased other funds limitation?
That would be a function that they would go before the
Before the e-board at that time? Okay, thank you.
With that, Senator Farioli, if you would put your ballpoint to paper and draft that letter, that would be much appreciated. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm a little confused now. I thought that the first recommendation from the good senator had to do with just putting a line so as the budget note, which is the budget note that we were talking about, that just said that this is what we wanted them to look and review before they came back to the emergency board. The second time that the senator spoke, we were talking about sending a letter directly to the agency, which is a different proposal than the initial proposal.
I do think that there are two different things going on here. In the interim, we would like to direct the agency to take a look at what it charges for the services,
yes,
and the maps and the publications.
Right.
If the revenue is increasable, or if the revenue does increase from those sources, to come back to the e-board to get permission to roll that money back into their budget.
That's correct.
The second thing that we want them to do is to be on notice that they could, that there is an interest in having them look at the fee structure, the permitting fee structure. I don't want to direct the agency to come to the e-board with that report. I think that that's something that needs to be taken up by the next session of the legislature.
I see. Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. I thought I blinked and missed something the senator said.
If there's no more discussions or questions, I will ask that the roll be called on that.
And a spirit of cooperation.
Senator Dukes.
Aye.
Senator Perioli.
Aye.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Hayden.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Yes.
Representative Bowman.
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Aye.
Chair Morgan?
Aye.
Motion passes.
The motion is carried, and we will pass the recommended budget for the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries onto the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair? Carrier.
Hmm?
Carrier.
What are your full Ways and Means?
Full Ways and Means has to
carry. Carry it to full, and then you have to assign one to the House and one to the Senate.
Yes.
See, who can I get today?
Madam Chair, I believe that's either I or Representative Hansen.
Yes, to carry it to full Ways and Means.
I
will give Representative Hayden the honor
Madam
of carrying that to full Ways and Means. Representative Hansen, would you be interested in carrying this on the House floor? And Senator Dukes, would you do the honors in the Senate? Thank you very much.
My question to Senator Dukes is, before you carry that bill on the Senate floor, are they going to give you your boot back?
We're
going
to
charge
them.
Oh, hey!
Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks a lot.
One way to
collect money.
Well, that didn't take long for them to get on that bandwagon.
Positive reinforcement.
Told you,
it works every time.
We have two items that we need to go over very quickly before we adjourn the meeting. We have scheduled a special meeting tomorrow, and I will have Mr. Rocco go over that for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Even though we promised you wouldn't have Friday meetings, we broke that promise already, and we've scheduled a informational meeting on the Community Solutions team and the governor's livability bonding proposal for tomorrow. It's a joint meeting with the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development,
And it'll be meeting in hearing room F at 1 o'clock. And if you can attend, the governor's staff will be providing an overview of the community solutions team and the livability. So I have an agenda here if you could get one before you leave.
And the thought on both of these were that there are portions of both of these budget items that are scattered amongst a number of agencies, and we wanted to give members of the subcommittees an opportunity to get an overview across the agencies of the total programs.
Madam Chair, we can't make that tomorrow since we've got extremely short notice. Will it be possible to get the material to members who are not able to make
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. We'll take Thank care you. Of doing that.
Madam Chair, will we have any piece of the community solutions team or the livability in this subcommittee?
Mr. Rocker?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, there are pieces of the community solutions team in the Department of Environmental Quality and in the Department of Land Conservation and Development. There are also pieces in housing, which would not be in here, but in Economic Development Committee and Department of Transportation, which is also in that other committee.
But we have two of them.
Two of them are in this. In Department of Administrative Services also has a piece.
And
we will make sure that all committee members get whatever materials provided at the meeting tomorrow. And we also have your schedule for next week, which is the Office of Energy on Monday and Tuesday, and then the Land Use Board of Appeals on Wednesday and Thursday, and Friday's off.
Until Thursday.
At this point.
Until Thursday.
Yeah. And then guess what will happen then?
So you've caught on to that trick already.
It didn't take long.
And if there is no more business,
Madam
to come
Chairman,
before
I'd
committee.
Like to open the bidding for the photographs. Many bus with one boot and $5.
I will adjourn the meeting.